Hello and welcome back to the Business Addicts Podcast. Today we have Derek, and you'll have to pronounce your last name. I'm name challenged, as I've said before. So I'll need you to do that for us.
But it's Derek. Derek Dombeck.
Okay, Dombeck. So, yeah, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you what your background is. We love to start in childhood, but you can choose what you want to show share. And then we'll start asking some questions, get into today.
Well, my childhood was a happy home, so that wasn't too bad. But I've been raised and spent my whole life in central Wisconsin area. And, you know, like a lot of people, I grew up in a blue-collar family. My dad was in construction, and ultimately, I went into construction as well. And in my mid-20s, which was a long damn time ago, I got the entrepreneurial bug to start a business, although I didn't know what that was at the time. And initially, I had actually gotten started in the working with families and you know, doing financial consulting. And I really liked it, but the financial services and financial consulting business of itself and what I had entered into was a multi-level marketing type of business, a pyramid business, so to speak. So I spent a lot of time sitting down with families, giving them an awesome plan on how to better their lives, and almost none of them would do it. And I started to really realize that I could do, you know, for myself what I wanted and not be out sitting down with these couples and individuals every night and weekend and taking up my own time. And what I had done prior to that is I had bought my own house, just a small little house on some acreage, and had, using my own two hands and my abilities in construction, I had tripled that thing in size, built a nice workshop. In my early 20s, I had a three-bedroom ranch house with a workshop and 20 acres, and I could see how I could build equity and I could buy properties at a discount. So the real estate bug really hit me hard. But simultaneous to that, I had met my wife, Tracy, and we were dating, and our dates were her helping me work on the house, which was fantastic because I had free labor. Well, free-ish labor. And, when we decided to get married, that was kind of one of our goals, was to get into real estate, but we didn't know how. And so, like a lot of people back then, at least, the internet wasn't a hopping thing with YouTube University everywhere. So we saw some late night infomercial type stuff about how to be a real estate investor. And we started going to some classes and seminars, and it led us to down a path of let's dive in, and let's dive in really fast, because I don't do anything halfway. So the first, we spent a couple months getting educated, but the first month that we decided to actually buy real estate, we bought four properties in 30 days and had really no idea what we were doing, other than we'll figure it out as we go. And it went well. And we took the equity from those properties. We kept rolling it and rolling it. So from 2003 until 2007, we had built up a portfolio of about $4 million of real estate. And that was 18, 19 properties, but they were spread out between Wisconsin and Florida. And then when the markets crashed in 2007, primarily the Florida real estate tanked, and we ended up in a position where our $4 million portfolio went down by 75% in under a year, and we were underwater. There was really nothing we could do. So to make matters worse, during the same time period, the mid to late 2000s, my wife and I found out we couldn't have kids naturally. So our oldest child is genetically ours. She's an in vitro child. And we tried that several more times unsuccessfully. And then we decided to adopt. And as the markets were crashing, we had already accepted a match to my son in China, except now I didn't have the money to bring him home. My credit was shot. I wasn't bankable. And my only alternative was to go and raise private money to pay for my son's adoption. And that was the first time that I ever used any private individual's money outside of a bank. And it worked out. I mean, we brought Robbie home, but we were underwater for several years. And because I'm a firm believer in taking responsibility for your actions, I didn't want to just take the easy route out. So we started flipping houses instead of originally we were buying and holding properties as rentals. We started flipping houses because we needed the short-term cash. We needed the chunks of money. But we'd get a chunk of money, it was already gone, right? We were playing from behind for so long. And eventually we finally dug out of that. And I really took those 3 or 4 years to study creative deal structuring, how to buy and or control real estate without using your own money, without using banks. But what I really studied was sales and negotiation. To the degree of I have my own style of negotiating, and I actually teach it now. I have a negotiations training because there is so much misinformation out there, and the used car salesman tactics are horrifically bad. So kind of moving forward from there, we started at childhood. Now I'm in my, 30s up until that point. And yeah, we took on business partners. We did joint ventures. Ultimately, I had a business partner for the last 10 years, which just recently we parted ways. But when I had met Jeff, my business partner, in 2012, he had never used a bank for anything, any of his investments. He had always raised private capital. And we started just raising more and more capital for our own deals. And we got to a point where we had more capital than deals. And we had friends in the business, which is my big mistake early on, is I didn't build a network. Tracy and I were just kind of closet investors. We didn't have anybody to turn to. We certainly didn't have podcasts or, chat rooms all over the country to try and get advice. And as I mentioned, we didn't have YouTube University. So we were on our own, and it was a huge mistake. So after meeting Jeff, we started building a network around the state of Wisconsin as well as nationally. We had other people that were, looking for money, but they had the deals, they just needed the money. Well, we had the investors and we didn't have enough deals. So we started a lending company. And originally it was a side project that just organically grew over time to essentially its peak was the last 3 years. Averaging about 20 to 25 loans a month, which is around $30 million a year in loans. And along the way, we were financially stable again. Things have gotten better with all of our personal stuff. And we decided to, in our early 40s, to adopt another child. So why not? So now we have a little 6-year-old daughter. And our son from China is 13 and our oldest is 17. So it's been a roller coaster for the last 20 plus years, but that's where I'm at.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing. So I love what I heard. One thing was that pain of going through those years where you were underwater, as you said, seemed like there were some pretty big benefits from that. What did you learn about money that, like, can you highlight some things that are, you already said some things that were different, but like your thoughts about money before that experience and then, after that experience when it comes to how you looked at the abundance of money or the lack of money and all that?
Yeah, absolutely, Kevin. A couple of big aha moments for me throughout that period was everybody's so reliant on institutional capital, and they're so reliant on what can be easy to get, but to a certain degree, you're selling your soul. And when specifically to the real estate investment business, if you start off not learning alternative strategies, you get comfortable. And that's what we did. We got comfortable using banks. It was easy. They were fighting for our business until everything shut down and the banks were all, you know, closing their doors. People we had relationships with for several years were escorted out, you know, lost their jobs. We had no control over our business, which means we had no control over our money. And when I deal with an individual, not if, but when there's challenges, because there's always challenges or can be, at least I can go have a conversation with that person. I can say, you know what, Kevin, Jamie, I know you've invested $100,000 with me. Here's what's going on. Here's what's, you know, the asset looks like right now. Here's our plan. And we got multiple plans. When you're dealing with institutions that sell off the loans, they don't care. You're just a file. The other thing that I really learned about money is just return on investment. People don't really factor the way that time builds wealth. And now, you know, my platform, my podcast is called The Generations of Wealth for a reason. It's not just about financial wealth. It's about physical wealth, financial wealth, time wealth, everything, passing that on to the next generation. But some of the mistakes that I made was selling too many properties. I flipped hundreds of homes over the years. And if we'd have kept one out of every three, one out of every four, right, for that mailbox money, that generational growth of the asset and the value and the cash flow. But a lot of us, prior to having a vision in place, which I'm a firm believer that you need a written vision of what you want your personal life to look like. And that didn't come until about 6 years ago. So we were just living for today back then, right? We were trying to survive for a period of a few years, but even after that, we were living for today, not really thinking about tomorrow. And yeah, we've had fun. Don't get me wrong. I'm not one to sit still and we do a lot of fun stuff. But now, as we've been in the business 21 years, properties are starting to pay off. They're free and clear. And this is when you have those moments where you look back and say, dang it, if I would have just kept a few more, they'd have been free and clear right now. And it would have been even easier, right? So the short-sightedness is common with entrepreneurs. We a lot of us don't think about the future as much as we should. But and my other pet peeve that I have to mention, Kevin, is when people use their houses as a piggy bank, using home equity lines of credit and risking their children's roof over their head for investment purposes. I think it's a terrible idea, and I've been there, done that, risked my house, fortunately didn't lose it, but lost a lot of other stuff. So those are some of my tougher life lessons through that.
Yeah. So, I feel like, as you're going through these things, like we've done a lot of things right, and then we've also done a lot of things wrong, so to speak, especially, you know, certainly around our calling, like, you know, when we started building this business and all that, we had quite a chunk in the bank, and we were sitting, we sold our rentals mainly because we were like, we need to focus on what we're doing here. And the rental business for us was very profitable. And yet it took a lot of time. It took a lot of effort. It took, and I was more of a kind-hearted soul sometimes than I needed to be. And that was more, I think that's really in alignment for me. That's like what we do today is more in alignment with me than being a landlord. So sold it to a friend of ours that is a natural landlord. but anyway, I just looking back at the road of the last few years and realizing just how I would not take one penny of that money back for the experiences I've had. And most of it's gone. And the reason I say that is because I've learned about, you know, what I've learned a bunch of things about money that don't fit in any training or any wealth building, you know, box, right? It's about me understanding that inside of my calling is such an abundance of money that, I mean, there's no limit, right? So, but I'm just comparing a little bit our experience to yours and just even, although they're very different, the thing that, as I think about my kids, that I want to be careful of is I don't want to protect them from the pain. Like early on in coaching, we wanted to use what we knew to help other people. And what we learned is that really our call to coaching was a call to personal growth for ourselves. And although we could help a few people until we really dug in and had some personal growth, especially for me, that we weren't ready to help people. And then eventually that started to grow to where there was real value in our being, right? And we understood the value in our being to the point where we could help other people. And anyway, I just realized that all of that came from the experience and making bad decisions and looking back and being like, I definitely learned from that experience. So, I mean, like it's introducing a complexity to what we're talking about, because on one hand, I don't want to take one bit of that like challenge away that helps you grow. And at the same time, I totally believe in generational wealth building. So how do you do both? You have any ideas on this area?
I have ideas, but I can't say they're proven yet. Cause I'm in the same boat, right? My 17-year-old daughter wants to be involved in our business and she is involved in our business. At this point, she does not have aspirations to go to college, which I'm totally fine with. I didn't go to college and I don't think it's for everybody. But I've told her, you don't just get to ride Easy Street because you have the same last name and you're starting in the mailroom. And that's where she is right now. Literally, she sends out letters to property owners for us to market to and has other duties as well. But of course, we want to shelter our kids from pain, but they've got to see some pain. So for me, we've never hidden challenges from our kids. You know, they've seen life and death. They've lost grandparents. They've lost loved ones. They've seen ups and downs in business, especially my oldest. And even when we decided amicably to part ways with my business partner, I mean, it was nothing like a nasty split up. It was just a different envision, which is so important to have your vision figured out. Otherwise, I'd probably still be partners with him and we'd be pulling each other in directions that neither one of us wanted to go.
Yeah.
But when we made that decision, I sat down with our kids, specifically my older two, and said, you know, 2024 is going to be a transition year. And maybe some things aren't going to be as easy to do as, I mean, for us, the last 3 years, part of our vision has been to take a 4 to 6 week long summer trip where we just hook up our fifth wheel and we go cross country with no plans. Well, perhaps we can't do that in 2024. When I was talking to them, you know, that they need to know that they need to know why. And I think that my kids are very well versed in return on investment, finances, you know, how money actually works. I have always sat down with McKenna, my oldest, and now I'm starting with my son as he's 13. But when we do a real estate transaction, I'll whiteboard the whole transaction. I'll sit down and show her the closing statements. Here's what we bought it for. Here's what we stuck into it. Here's what we sold it for. Beautiful. Here's our profit. And, but then on top of that, I want her to see, let's just say we made $20,000 of profit. I want to put it into something that, that she can relate to. So when she was about 11 or 12 is when I started doing this, she drank a ton of milk. So I'd say, okay, McKenna, we made $20,000. If milk is $4 a gallon, how many gallons can we buy with that $20,000? And we would do the math. And then we would figure out how many hours does somebody that works at a job with an average wage around here have to work to buy the same amount of milk. And that's when it started sinking in for her. Now, 5-6 years later, we're whiteboarding really kind of intense creative deal structures that most adults can't comprehend, and she gets it because we've been doing it for quite some time. So I don't know what the end result's going to be, Kevin, because it's a work in progress, but that's the path that we've chosen, is to just be open and honest with them. They don't need to know every detail of the finances, but they need to know when things are going good, and they need to go know when things are not going good, in my opinion.
Yeah. I think there's a couple things we've learned in family business that I'll just kind of throw out there for you to respond to. And one is that we've been theorizing with some family businesses and some thinkers in this space about kind of a family office standpoint, a family office that is supportive of kids doing either being in the business or exploring if they want to do something independent. So one thing, when we started working with family business, we thought we were called to keep people together. Well, the funny thing is that actually isn't our background, right? And even all the family business I've worked for as an employee, that wasn't eventually the background, right? Like there is a difference in calling generation to generation. So how do we support that? And one theory would be, okay, creating a family office, which you could, this could be a formal thing or it could be very informal. Like, well, I have a lawyer, I have a coach, and these are the resources. And by the way, you know, you feel a calling to do this other business here. My resources are available. It's going to cost you, but I want to support you in doing this. And, you know, let's review this together. Are these the people that you're also called to work with? And is it supportive of your vision? I don't know, something along those lines. So that's one idea. The other one is, from a personality standpoint, I've learned that some people learn more from failure than others. So I think understanding what the kid's personality is and whether or not they learn from failure, because for me, I learn from failure. And actually, if I'm not failing, I'm not pushing things enough. And the biggest thing that I would say, one of the biggest things that I've done wrong in my life is not experiment enough. Because in a healthy place, I'm experimenting and I'm failing occasionally, right? Like, and it's not because it's not for the point isn't to fail. The point is to experiment. So, anyway, any thoughts on that?
Well, Jamie told me you fail all the time, but she could just be making that
she's
up.
Right.
I'm not sure. So I didn't really know a lot about this topic up until a few years ago when we were introduced to predictive index testing. And so I've had my PI for several years, and so has my wife. And we just had our oldest daughter. We had her predictive index test done. And if you're not familiar with it, compared to DISC and Colby and a lot of the other testing, predictive index, it's a very short survey and it's scary accurate, to the point where it's the only testing model that you can hire and fire people off of legally. And Harvard law has, you know, given it a 98 or some, you know, high percentage accuracy. All I know is when I had it done and the person that did it for me, kind of read back my personality type and what my strengths are and what my weaknesses are. And he had never met me in person before. This was just off of this short survey I took. It scared the bejesus out of me because it was so accurate. And knowing what my wife's was, what mine was, and we had all of our employees done, my business partner, we were able to start working together in a completely different way. One really good example is my wife and I tried sharing an office, which went horribly bad. And when we had our predictive index done, Mike was the gentleman's name that was doing our readbacks. He, without any previous knowledge, he said, Derek needs to have his own space where he can spread out. He needs to have absolute silence. If he was working in a cubicle farm and there was a copy machine right outside his cubicle, his productivity would be nothing. He gets distracted, you know, by, because like my peripheral vision, I catch everything. And even with my hearing, whereas my wife can focus in on one thing and the background noise and the kids, and it does not bother her whatsoever. And for him to say that just based off these two short little surveys was, to me, was just remarkable. So we did. We changed things up. I've got my own office space. She's got her own office space. That was just one little example. So now looking at kids, predictive index, they don't really suggest doing it until kids are 18 because they're still shaping their lives. But I would agree with you, Kevin, that for some kids, it is important to let them have the failures because they learn better from it. But depending on what their natural tendencies are, others are going to be astute enough to learn by hearing and seeing others make the mistakes. So I would have believed probably stronger 5-6 years ago, the way you just described that, you know, I think kids do need to make the mistakes on their own. Now my answer would be, I think it depends on their personality and how they hear and see and learn things. So,
yeah, I guess more and more I'm migrating more to like we just less control, if you get what I'm saying, like more responding to what, you could say it, letting go or surrender, or, but like also support and a vision, like you said, right? Like you still want to have the vision. You still want to have, support for the different generations. You certainly want to encourage growth. And at the same time, like the more we control it, more we, you know, force things to happen, the more likely things are going to explode. I think, that's what I've been learning.
Yeah. And I'm a self-proclaimed control freak. So it's not easy for me to let them touch the hot burner on the stove. Right. But sometimes they have to. So,
yeah. Got it.
So I want to go back to the family office thing that you brought up, Kevin. And another word is sort of like this family enterprise idea where, you know, Derek, what we've seen happen in some family businesses is where, you know, they'll say things like to the next generation, like you're not capable, or, and this is after they've been in the business for, you know, 20 years and all of a sudden everybody starts freaking out because there's, you know, just not an awareness of whose gifts are what and how they could be shifting things. But the thing that I think is really sad or detrimental is when they feel like the kids need to go out and experience the real world without the support system, because they're entrepreneurial now. They've, you know, their brain is shifted to the point where they're unicorns and you can't just throw them out in the real world without the support systems that, like you said, your network, you know, and kind of going back to what Kevin was, sort of this idea of, can we help entrepreneurs create support systems for the next generation that include, our network, you know, how can we help them with that?
Yeah. You can throw them out, but That's not, and counter to what a lot of business owners think, that's not, it's a hard way of doing things, right? Because they've learned how to be an entrepreneur with us and with their family. And then suddenly to say, okay, go join the rat race at the lowest level, right? Because you're not prepared. That's not really helping.
Yeah, it's kind of like taking a pet bunny rabbit and throwing them out in the wild, and you know the hawks are chasing them for sure. What I believe is I want to get my kids around other kids who have parents that are entrepreneurial. So we do that at our events. So the Generations of Wealth Voyage, which is a real estate investment conference on a cruise ship, we encourage people to bring their kids. So we just hosted this event a couple weeks ago, and we had, I believe, 19 children on the ship. And they are building their own network, and they see each other two or three times a year because we have a couple different events a year. But they're building their own network regardless if they ever go into business, regardless if they go into real estate. They are seeing and have friends that think the way they think.
I love this.
And when my kids come home from these conferences, by the way, two of my three kids now got truancy letters in the last 2 weeks, which I love, because we take them out of school to go on these events. Like, my kids are working, and they have tasks and roles and responsibilities on these events. And the school has to send the letters. I mean, my kids are all straight A students, but you know, legally they have to, which makes me proud.
But, yeah, love it.
But the point is, when they go back to school and they're with their regular friends, they can't have the same conversations at all. Those kids have, I mean, all those kids see is you went on an 8-day cruise and it was a vacation. Well, they had a good time, but it wasn't a vacation at all. And they're seeing, and in fact, one day on this cruise, I had to have a little heart to heart with my 17-year-old. And because we had planned a schedule of events, and I had a speaker that was doing a 20-minute presentation specifically for the kids. And the kids all showed up on time and then decided to leave and go get ice cream. And I know this is a silly example, but they came back and it was literally 30 seconds from when we were starting. And my oldest daughter is the one in charge. And I took her aside after that and I said, you do not have the authority to screw up our schedule. And this is our business. I said, you're 17, but you know this is our business. If you came back 5 minutes late with those kids, that disrupts the entire conference. And, you know, she had a rude awakening. But she took it and she got better. She, you know, but that's the point, right? I don't coddle, and I have expectations, and they get met, or there's consequences. But these kids are getting that exposure, which I think is fantastic.
Yeah, I love that. I love everything you just said. I think that's perfect. The whole build your own network and get people your age, because you know what we're learning, and I think the whole universe is learning, the whole world is learning this, that each generation really has their own gifts and talents. They have their own challenges, and contrary to what a lot of people, including me, in the past think, they are actually uniquely gifted to handle the challenges. And if we get in their way, they can't, right? So a lot of people think, like I said before COVID, millennials and Gen, whatever it is, whatever the next one is, Gen Z maybe, I don't know.
Gen X.
Okay. So, the thinking was they don't like work and they don't whatever, but, really they're like uniquely, suited for going through COVID and for working remotely and for, you know, doing a lot of part-time jobs or whatever, right? Like in a completely different way than was traditional. And I think, anyway, so I won't get down that road, but yeah, we each have our own unique, And so that's great to have the whole them networking with their own generation so they can learn from each other and be more aligned with what they need to offer the business world as a generation.
For me, Kevin, our big turning point in our business and our lives was when we started getting in the right masterminds with the right people that held us accountable, have a board of advisors. And I emphasize the word right, because there's plenty of them that are not right for you, right? It depends what your goals are from a mastermind. But that's when I started getting introduced to Vision. And subsequently, we now host three of our own national mastermind groups called the REI Circle of Trust. And what I envision for my children, especially my oldest, is as she graduates high school and maybe a year or two after high school, to have her leading a youth Circle of Trust mastermind group and see where that leads. But that's definitely something that I know what a difference it made in our world. And the earlier that somebody can get involved in that and get their vision figured out and have peers that are holding them accountable throughout their earlier years, I can't see a downside to that. Now, there may be a downside, because perhaps they start, instead of being mature enough to gently guide and give advice, certainly you could have some bad apples that just start belittling people in their mastermind, and that could have a negative effect. Mm-hmm. But I think if we are conscious of it and we kind of guide her to guide the group properly, I'm excited for it. I think she wants to do it, and we'll see. I mean, she's 17. She can certainly change her mind.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. So you've told us a bunch of different things that you've been involved with. I love what I'm hearing from you, especially because you've built this over time and it's your calling. You've identified your vision. You're doing a lot of things that we believe in. And so I've heard masterminds. Can you kind of give us a rundown of like what are the offerings you've got today for the listeners to be able to understand how they could get involved and be a part of what you're doing and who you're looking for? Like, who's the right fit for you?
So our avatar is anybody entrepreneurial. I mean, yes, I'm a real estate investor, but that doesn't mean that what we teach or talk about isn't advantageous to anybody. Following the Generations of Wealth podcast at thegenerationsofwealth.com or YouTube or anywhere else, you're going to see that I don't just interview real estate investors. We've got people from a lot of different genres of investing that are on that show. And that's kind of the umbrella over everything else that we do. The conference that I mentioned, which we do once a year on a cruise ship, that is specifically for real estate investors. It's an advanced strategies conference. The masterminds that we host, although the majority of the people in it are real estate investors, it's not real estate specific. That's just the people I'm around the most. So naturally, that's who ended up joining. But we do our masterminds a little different, where each group meets twice a year in person. We rent a big house somewhere different every time. We all live together for 4 or 5 days, and you're immersed. Like, I've been in masterminds where you go to a hotel conference room, your meeting is great, you go to dinner, which means you're in a loud restaurant, you can only talk to the person across from you or right next to you, and then everybody hides. They escape to their hotel room. Certainly everybody has their own room. We rent a big enough house, but there's really no escaping. And everybody does have their time in the quote unquote hot seat to just focus on you. But the conversations over breakfast or dinner or in the pool or walking on the beach, wherever we are, that is where the real magic happens, because people get very close very fast. So that has just been something we've built out over the last 6 years and kind of tweaked as we went along. So beyond that, I did mention a negotiations training. That is something that we just did a live event and I recorded it. So it's going to be available online here very shortly. Again, none of this is a sales pitch. All this is really just to lead people to a resource where mm-hmm. you can learn more about living a vision-led life. You know, my tagline is live your vision, love your life. And that's really all it's about.
Mm. Beautiful. Yeah. Well, I can tell we're going to be a part of each other's lives in the future because this is the stuff we believe in. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast. Jamie, you have anything else you wanted to cover or bring up?
No, I think it's great. And I really appreciate you continuing to spread the message and share, you know, your belief system. I guess the only question that I have for you is what is the big vision that you and your wife have, say, for 3 to 5 years, 10 years? How far out can you see?
Well, when people figure out their vision, us included, normally it starts out with stuff, right? The houses, the vacations, the cars, things like that. For us, we're beyond the stuff. Now we're more in the philanthropical mode. So we want to help families that have challenges, you know, having kids, whether it's through adoption or through infertility treatments, or whatever. That's a passion of ours. And a lot of our vision is now around our family, and it's around our legacy, bringing them into the business or supporting them if they don't want to be in the business. So the 3 to 5 year plan is, and keep our 6-year-old, her nickname is Monster. You know, we got to keep her in check. But, you know, for us, it's more about time. Our vision is spend as much family time together as we can while we can. And it sounds a little blah, but honestly, all the traveling that we do with our masterminds and with all of our other events that we are involved in, about every 2 to 3 weeks, we're traveling somewhere. And so my vision is to sit at my own house on my own deck, look at our horses, you know, spend time with my kids, because after a while, living out of a suitcase is just living out of a suitcase. It might be a nice suitcase, but it's still the same thing. Yeah. So.
Hmm. Well, yeah, you can join us in Mexico. We're gonna bring our whole family there. You know?
I was just thinking we're gonna be in the process of moving or transitioning to Mexico, and it's really messing with my mind because our kids, we say soul school, so they get to choose what they want to do, and so we've already been kind of living a life that's been vacation like slash, you know. What are we doing? But moving to Mexico is kind of taking it to another level. Like, are we vacationing? Are we living? Is it both? So it's exciting to see, like, okay, the life that I want to create is where we're doing both together in a way that flows and that the kids are really getting to experience this opportunity as well. So it's fun stuff. Yeah.
One reason we do 9 a.m. a podcast, Derek, is that a lot of times we have a little one joining us. So we're immersed. This is an immersive experience. You're just lucky that it's early in the day.
Well, it is spring break right now, and my kids are all home as well. But we sent them off because daddy's got podcasts to be on, and it's quiet time.
Got it. Yeah. Lens. Sorry, did you want to say something else? I cut you off.
I was just glad that Jamie let us get a word in edgewise today because, you know, it's nice. But no, I really appreciate you all having me on the show, and anything I can do to help you guys personally or your audience, no strings attached. I just, that's really what I want to do is expand our family, our network, and, you know, the Generations of Wealth platform.
Yeah. Beautiful. Well, I just want to take the opportunity to thank you both for the business that you've done, right? Like, the big thing for me, and has been for decades at this point, is at least a decade, I should say. I'm not quite that old, but is that every business owner, through their for-profit work, is serving the world, And I love that you're doing, you're focused on the film profit, film, I don't even, I'm not going to say that word. Apparently I can't say it this morning. I love that you're focused on that and giving back that way. And that's great. But also everything you've been doing through all your for-profit is huge, right? Like you've highlighted that today and you're, I don't know. I just feel like we underrate how much we serve each other by doing the for-profit work we do. And that's why our business as a coaching company is not nonprofit. We definitely do a lot of things for no profit. But at the same time, we believe that if it's for profit, then there's a value exchange, right? And we have to identify what that value is. And it, anyway, so sorry to get on my soapbox here at the end, but I just want to thank you for all the for profit and nonprofit work you're doing, understanding that you have, and through your family, have moved the world forward. And definitely any way we can get away from big institutions like you are. I mean, like, that just makes it more personal. That makes us more human. That makes everything shift. And so I'm interested in meeting you in person and getting to know you better and just really appreciate all you're doing and for coming on the podcast today.
Well, if you can publish that address in Mexico, I think a lot of us will come meet you in person.
Yeah, we are. Anyone that wants to, by the way, to any listeners, we're very accessible. Just like any podcaster. I mean, literally, if you're talking to Grant Cardone, you can get him on the phone in no time, right? Because he's accessible. People that are doing well are very accessible. You just have to have the courage to get a hold of them. And we're the same too. I mean, obviously Derek has a podcast too, and we're all from central Wisconsin and we're very accessible. So absolutely. We're not going to give you the address. I think that's a little unsafe, but we will privately, and you can definitely come. So, do that if you're interested. All right. Thank you very much. And we will see you next time.
Thank you for tuning in, and to stay in touch, email us at info@businessaddictspodcast.com.